Sean also.
Hey, Sean, how are you?
Good.
All right. Just one moment here. We'll get going. I'm going to do an abbreviated session today. I have to get to the city. But I wanted to actually take up a point that we were discussing last week, actually, Doug. It was something you had said regarding equality between the Gentile and Jew and following his own system, will he be able to achieve the same type of perfection? So just give me one second. Okay. All right, so Doug, maybe you want to, do you remember the question that you had?
Rabbi, you're just a little faint this morning.
Excuse me?
You're just a little faint this morning.
I'm faint. It's not picking up the sound well.
It'll work, but I just didn't know if there was anything else to be done.
Let's see. Let me try the other phone. Hold on a second. Tell me if this is any better.
That is, thank you.
That is better, huh? It wasn't the phone, I'm just talking louder. No, I'm just kidding. Okay. It could just be the battery in the phone. Alright, so Doug, do you remember the statement that you made last week towards the end of the class?
Rabbi, to be honest, I do not.
Okay, I'll remind you.
Thank you.
The question was regarding the regarding a Gentile just keeping his system, or the 60 or so commands or aspects of the commands, will he be able to reach the same level of perfection as a Jew who has the 613? So first, I had stated that the Jew having more definitely going to have much more of a perfection by following the other commands, and I remained firm. That makes sense. I mean, the more perfection any person's involved in, the just naturally follows that he's going to be more refined and in line with God's will. That much more. I mean, it's clear. But we don't say that since say Gentile is keeping X amount of commands less than a Jew. That if both the Jew and Gentile are on a daily basis learning as much as they can, applying it as much as they can, and that's really the path they're going, they see the will of God, and they're basically functioning, let's say, like an Abraham who didn't have a Torah, but is living his daily life, there's only so many hours in the day. So I stated that the perfection that they would achieve would be equal. Because as long as you are doing what you can to be in the will, in God's will, you can't do more than that. It's humanly impossible to squeeze out more hours in the day than are available, and to you can't go faster than your own pace. I think even Maimonides says that everybody has the capability to be perfected like a Moses. Then the question comes up: well, the Torah says openly that nobody reached the level of prophecy like Moses, and nobody ever will. So how could Maimonides say that a person can reach Moses' level? So the reasoning is that if a person actualizes their potential like Moses did, so everybody has a potential. Nobody, not many people are like Einstein or an Aristotle or Moses. And but everybody who has their own level of capacity intelligently, and if a person does reach that, so that's something which is determined by God with the intellectual capacity that the person has. And he cannot be blamed for not reaching, the heights of Moses if that's just not in his capability. So the same would apply here, that if a person is following to the best of their capability, so then they are equal in terms of fulfilling their capacity. And, again, So that, I think that answered your question. Do you remember now?
Yes, although I think it was asked by someone else, but this helps. Thank you.
All right. Yeah, I thought a bit about it, and yeah, I thought it was important to underline that. And again, just to reiterate, you know, the seven Noahide laws are a starting point. They're what's minimally required. So I was actually discussing this topic with Rabbi Mann, and his words were that any human being who wants to can seek out God and live perfected life. So it's available. How God decides, you know, to what parents a person's born, that's not in our, you know, that's not in our jurisdiction. That's not something which we really, it's God's will. But we know that there's the Medrash, there's the statement of the rabbis, that God went to all the nations and offered them the Torah, and each nation, each Gentile nation rejected it for one reason or the other. But what do you derive from the fact that he went to every single nation and offered them the Torah?
There's nothing inherently superior about any particular nation.
What was that?
There's nothing inherently superior about any particular nation.
Exactly, right. That's the exact point. If you made it available, the same system it made available to everybody, that means, right, there's no superiority in the nation. There may be individuals in different cultures or backgrounds, but that's, you know, equally spread. That's just, that's the way it is, but the nations themselves all have the ability to follow it. And there is another statement in the Torah. I'm just going to put these on screen. I had some time earlier. So just in case anybody's online and wants to copy these sources, then I'll read them to you. But I'll just put them on the screen as well. And let me see. Okay, there's one source here that is in, I'll tell the exact location. Okay, this is a Deuteronomy 4:8. And there it says, just paraphrasing it, that the other nations will look at the Jews fulfilling the mitzvahs, and they'll view the Jewish nation as being wise and understanding. Alright, the exact reading, again, is Deuteronomy 4:8. States, so God tells them in 4:6, you should guard the commands, because it is your wisdom and your understanding in the eyes of the people, that they will hear all of these statutes, and they will say, but really, this people is wise and understanding, this great nation. For what great nation has to them God so close to them, like God, our God, whenever we call out to him? Now here's the verse. And what great nation has to them statutes and commands that are righteous, like this entire Torah? So God, Moses actually is telling the people that this will be the response of the other nations when you guard and you keep the Torah. Now for what reason is Moses telling this to the people? And so on one level, he's impressing upon them the perfection of the system, that even those who are not biased to it will see it and will appreciate that there is a tremendous wisdom here. So he's trying to compel the Jews to have this recognition of what they have, this great gift. But on another level, the fact that the other nations can make this recognition that these commands that we have are perfect and righteous, you have another proof right here that the Gentiles are no different than Jews in terms of having the intellectual capacity to recognize what is a perfect lifestyle. So again, we have another proof that There is no discrepancy. There is complete equality between a Jew's perception of the Torah and its values, as well as a Gentile, because Moses says clearly, the other nations will see equally as well as you that there's profound ideas here, and they're perfect, and they're righteous. Okay? And on top of that, this is something which Moses is telling the people is a good value, right? That the other nations will see this? So if it's a value, that means it's God's will that the other nations should see this. Okay? So not only is this verse telling us that the capacity is equal between Jew and Gentile, but it's also telling us God's will. So let's talk about two things. The capacity of humans is equal, and that God's will is that everybody should share in the good equally. Okay, that is Deuteronomy 4:8. And you have another verse in Exodus 32:12. Now this is after the Jews had sinned with the gold calf, and God threatened the extermination of the Jews, and he said that he'll create a new nation for Moses. So Moses' response was following: what will Egypt say? Why shall Egypt say that, quote, in evil did you, God, take the Jews out of Egypt to kill them in the mountains? So Moses' concern, if God was going to destroy the Jews, was that it would have a poor reputation in the eyes of the Egyptians. I mean, they're the very people that enslaved Moses and his people for all these years. Moses still had a concern that God's will, God's reputation, would be tainted, it would be tarnished. So he says, if you wipe out the Jews, it's not going to look well, it'll be misinterpreted. Meaning to say what? Meaning to say that Moses recognizes God's will that the whole world should perceive truth. Even those that oppress the Jews. Okay, and now coming up on the... how's the sound, by the way, Doug? It's okay?
Yes, it is. Thanks, Rabbi.
And then, we're coming up on Shavuos, where the Jews received the Torah on Mount Sinai, and we read the book of Ruth. And there are some people that have the opinion that the Jew has this elevated soul, or a different or holy soul, or a superior soul, so on and so forth. But the very fact, if you think about it, that the perfection that Ruth had in recognizing Judaism and converting and then marrying the sons of Naomi, one of the sons of Naomi. So it shows that her recognition of Judaism preceded her conversion to Judaism. So that means when she was still yet a Gentile, that is where her real perfection was. That was where the greatness was, and that's why God selected from her seed that King David and King Solomon and eventually the Messiah, all from her lineage. So, with simply considering the facts and looking at the Torah's words, we come to the conclusion that there is the equality. And again, we have to keep in mind that there's not any type of a diminished type of a lifestyle that anybody has is not born Jewish. That's not true. God's will demanded that monotheistic individual Abraham would be the one that his descendants would now have the system for the whole world. But you see that we just read in 4:8 in Deuteronomy that it is for the whole world, and it's God's will that they should recognize these great righteous commandments. So Moses is saying to the Jews, keep it, keep the system, it's good, and don't. It's not just because I'm telling you, but the other nations will recognize it. That means other nations can recognize it. They have the capacity. And that means that this is God's will that they should recognize it, because Moses is concerned about it, and Moses was completely in line with God's will. And the fact that we hold up the system and when we keep it is for the good of everybody.
Rabbi?
Yes.
What is What's the impact? I guess this is kind of a corollary to the fact that if Israel is keeping the Torah, then the other nations will recognize that and they'll benefit from it. What about the aspect, do the nations have the capacity to recognize when Israel is not keeping the Torah or the intended, what are the consequences?
Yeah, there is another verse in the Torah that says that too. It says that when the Jews suffer such severe destruction, again, that shows an unnatural response. And the other nations will say, this can only be this bad if God had sold them, meaning God abandoned them. So they will view the negative as God's will as well. So that's also another verse in the Torah.
I've read some articles published by some rabbis that say that one of the reasons why anti-Semitism is in the world is because the nations recognize Israel is not keeping the Torah. I mean, it was kind of an interesting perspective.
Yeah, I mean, that's actually a truth, because that's according to Rabbi Chait's class on when Jacob was confronted by Esav. So he said to him that I've dwelled with Laban, and I didn't learn from his ways. So what he was saying was that if I was living a corrupt life, then you have a justification to hate me and kill me. But if I show you that I have been living perfectly righteous and I did not learn anything from that evil person, Laban, now there's no basis for your anti-Semitism, your hatred to me. This is what Jacob was saying to his twin brother. So there is basis for what you read in the article. It is true.
That was an article published by Rabbi Chait?
Rabbi Chait gave it, yes. He actually gave it. It's on, I think he called it Jacob, the Master of Politics, I think was the name of the article.
Your master, was that done this year?
No, many years ago.
Okay, I'll look it up in the archives. Thank you.
Right. If you have a problem getting it, let me know. I can probably just email you the article.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Right. I mean, there's other reasons for anti-Semitism, too.
There's plenty of reasons. I mean, there's excuses for it. There's no reasons.
Yeah. Well, no, there are reasons, because if we misrepresent what the Torah is, so then it's not presenting a good system. So then people will not. People should have a dislike towards it. If we, you know, represent Torah as so diluted, like many people do, and they accept Christianity, they want to show how politically correct they are. So they try to show that we'll have open dialogue with Christians and this and that in order to get public, you know, accolades. At the same time, they're diluting the pure system, which completely and outrightly rejects any type of form of Christianity. But yeah, it's important that the Jews stands up firm and is like Jacob did, you know, committed to the true ideals and presenting them without dilution and not being apologetic, because that's something also which other nations disrespect. If you're trying to suck up to them, that whole method of trying to placate others, you know, a person that's below a person. Yeah, I don't want a person who's just trying to, be loyal to me. I'm more impressed by a person who stands on his own. So there's a psychological phenomenon as well. All right. So this is what I wanted to bring up. There wasn't much more I really wanted to discuss. I was thinking about this concept. And it's good we actually have the verses in front of you that you see clear, but this system is really for everybody. There's only one human being. I mean, again, God never reinvented man from the time of Adam. So it doesn't make any sense that there's any difference between any member of the human race. So if one system is good for one human, it has to be good for the next. I mean, you think about it, just like, you know, the same surgery is applied to the same people. Well, the guy's an Eskimo, the guy is Negro, the guy is Jewish, whatever it is. If a person's got a certain heart ailment, they're going to treat each one of those people the same way, because the human design physically is identical. Same thing psychologically. And same thing philosophically. So there can't be more than one system. It just does not make sense. If there's more than one type of human being, then it would make sense to have more than one system. So that's an important thing. It's interesting also that some of the proponents of the fact that they want to see it as a great superior Jewish soul, they quote verses that where God is addressing Adam. And say he breathed the tzelem elokim, the intellect, into Adam. So I say, oh, look, you know, he's got a higher level soul than everybody else, but Adam was a Gentile, so it's a real contradiction. People don't even realize what they're saying. So it was really very fortunate that God has kept his promise, and then he has maintained the existence of Torah in every generation. It will never leave the mouths of our children and our grandchildren. We read every day in the morning prayers, and we have his message, his ideas, intact. So if we always are loyal and go back to the verses, this is where we have to, this has to be our basis. And yeah, there's a woman from who's I'm in contact with from Italy, very intelligent, and she actually just joined us online. So good morning, Rosora, nice to see you. I just saw her join online, and she had mentioned to me that there were a number of Jewish websites that were making statements about the superiority of the Jewish soul, but not one of them had any verses. And when they quoted things, they misquoted. And one of the individuals, one of the rabbis, conceded that it was incorrect, and he changed what he had put on his website. The other rabbi we never heard back from. And I wrote to him at least two or three times. And there was no ability to step down from his platform. And that's really that's evil, because you're misleading people just because you cannot say I'm wrong. So that's a really terrible trait. I mean, that's what Maimonides says. There are two traits that we have to go to the opposite extreme. Every other trait, like being very greedy, or being like a spendthrift, or a person's very shy, or he's very brazen. So neither one of those two polar extremes is good. Maimonides says you should be equidistant from the two extremes, because when you are equidistant, as Rabbi Chaya explained, then there is the least amount of pull from the two poles. It's like putting two magnets on a table. If you put a steel ball perfectly between the two magnets, it won't move. But if you nudge the ball a little bit one way or the other, then the magnetism is going to pick it up, and then the ball is going to be attracted to that extreme. So that's the way our minds work, our emotions work. If we're right between the two extremes of all the emotions, so then there will be no pull. And the purpose of not having a pull on ourselves by the emotions is in order to emancipate our intelligence from any type of a emotional duress, any type of emotional pull. And then our intelligence is free to function purely in line with reason. Except for two. Maimonides says anger, we have to go to the opposite extreme, because that's akin to idolatry. Anger is when a person is trying to he can't accept reality, something happens, so he's angry. See, the expression of anger is a demonstration of the inability to accept a realistic situation that you're in. Don't be angry, accept it, work with it, and try to improve it. And the other emotion is ego, haughtiness, arrogance. So that also is to be going to the other extreme, because if a person's arrogant, so then he doesn't have the ability to admit error. And that's exactly what we saw in the case that I'm just, citing to you. And since our whole purpose is to humble ourselves before God and to recognize His truths, we can't have any agenda. Our life, and it's the more a person gets involved with this way of thinking, the happier he's going to be. If he starts to see that I just put my own agenda aside, forget my ego when it comes to learning, I'll just be sensitive to God's words. Like, again, something which Rabbi Chait said, let the words speak to you. Meaning, when you're studying the Torah, God wrote it in a very careful, precise, perfect manner, that you'll start sensing things that are wow, why is this word saying this and not that? Like we were just doing with the other nations are going to see how the righteous these statutes are that we're following. And from there we derive a number of principles. But then the actual words themselves, I mean, they say, Mi Goy Gadol, what great nation has to them, Hukim Umishpatim, meaning statutes and laws that are righteous, like this entire Torah, which I placed before you today. This is what Moses was telling the Jews at the end of his life in Deuteronomy. Right, and then he goes on to remind them, don't forget what your eyes saw, referring to the Shavuos holiday, the giving of the Torah. He says, but be careful, lest you forget. And he says, guard your soul. So this is a matter of your eternal life, if you forget this issue. And he says, very much you should guard your soul, lest you forget the matters which your eyes saw, or lest there be removed from your heart all the days of your life. And you should also make them known to your children and to your grandchildren. The day which God stood on Sinai, the day that you stood before God at Sinai in Horeb, which is another name for that place. And God told me, assemble me the people, and I will make them hear my words, in order that they should learn to fear me all their days that they are living on the earth, and their children will they teach. So the event was for them and for future generations. All right, you see that's repeated twice. Moses tells them that don't forget what your eyes saw and teach them to your children. And then he reminds them about the event where God said, God himself said, assemble for me the people, and I'll make them hear my words, and their children they will teach. So you see that when there's a repetition, and these are two verses, the one follows the other. These verses are Deuteronomy 4, 9 and 10. So it's 4, 9 and 10. This is right after the verse we were talking about. So you see that is the primary concept and an essential element of the whole revelation at Sinai. It should be for them, that they should fear God their entire days, they should now have a proof of God's existence, and also it would be a grounds to teach the children. This is really where the whole proof will be for those people who weren't there. And I don't know if you get the Jewish Times, but this week we reprinted Rabbi Chait's article on Torah from Sinai, and I must have read it a dozen times myself, and still I glean new ideas from it, just because it was such a beautiful article showing how what the real proof is. Judaism is based on proof and intelligence, as opposed to all the other religions, and what the exact proof is, because there's a difference between what we witness ourselves, first-hand knowledge, and between what somebody tells us. And that is exactly what these two verses are telling you, that I just read to you, that Sinai was to be a proof for those people there, and also that they should teach their children. Meaning this is the basis for which you will be able to teach your children this truth. So right from the verses, I'm trying to show you that right from the verses you see how precise and the perfect message that is being communicated to us. And you see the repetition that God used in the Torah. He has two verses, one after the other, and it's repeating something. That means this is very, very, this is urgent. This is an important message. So if you're just sensitive to the words and you're loyal to the verses in the Torah, then you won't be able to be steered wrong. People will say a lot of things. People like to have things in print and to publish their names and their photos, and this becomes a far greater goal than being honest and presenting what is the truth. But really, it's evil. It's evil to do that. I mean, the self is now greater than others. Now, of course, you don't kill yourself or somebody else, but we're not talking about that. We're talking about how, like Maimonides says, arrogance is something which we don't compromise on. We go to the opposite extreme. We forgive those who oppress us. We don't retaliate, unless, of course, it's for the sake of Torah. But personal retaliation, an individual does not do, because That show is a concern for the self, for my ego. Oh, he can't say that to me. But that is far from what the greatest minds believed. And Moses being the greatest mind, it said in connection with Moses that he was the most humble of any man alive on the earth. And again, as Rabbi Chait explained, because with the greatest knowledge of God comes the greatest humility, because the disparity between God and man is seen the greatest in Moses. He has the greatest knowledge that he can see that to the greatest degree that a human can, what difference there is between man and God. Maimonides actually quotes a very nice thing in the Guide to the Perplexed. He says that with the level of intelligence comes the person's perfection. He says that King David said, "I am but a worm." And Abraham was in a higher level. And Abraham said, "I am but dust." And Moses, who was in the highest level, said, "What am I?" Meaning, I'm nothing. So as you ascend the levels of human perfection, the statement, the self-assessment, becomes less and less. So King David viewed himself as very little. He was a very perfected person, but he considered himself like a worm. But a worm is an animated being. Abraham, who was on a higher level, considered himself not as animate, but just as dust, completely inanimate. But he still considered himself as a substance. And Moses, who was on the highest level, he didn't call himself anything. He said, "What am I? I'm nothing." So it's a beautiful idea, the way that, you know, Maimonides was able to, you know, bring that out from the verses. I mean, there are so many messages in the Torah, it's just amazing. And we're lucky to have somebody like Maimonides that can distill these type of, you know, beautiful concepts for us. Somebody wanted to say something. I heard somebody speak up. Okay, I guess.
Rabbi, I was going to ask you to repeat David and Abraham, Moses. That's a beautiful idea. It's just that you already did that, so
okay.
I just wrote them down.
Okay. Yeah, it's very good. It is good. It's a great book, The Guide to the Perplexed. Just amazing. Definitely, it's a must read, and you got to read it many times too. All right. Any questions or comments? All right. Again, I did have to leave a little bit early today, but it definitely covered what I wanted to and more. I'm glad that we touched on these other points I didn't plan to, but I think it just rounds out the picture. And again, I'm going to ask you if you want to think about during the week, if there's any topics that you'd like to take up, any questions that you're working on. By the way, Doug, you got an email to the site this week. Somebody was reading your article on moods, and they were just very impressed with your style and then the concept, so I just want to convey that to you.
Thank you, Rabbi. I appreciate that.
Yeah, it was very nice. I'll forward you the email.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. All right, so maybe you think about it during the week if there's any, you know, topics that you're working on, any questions. And either communicate during the week. Again, Wednesday and Thursday is Shavuos. But we'll pick up on Sunday.
Okay. Well, thank you, Rabbi.
Okay.
Thank you. Have a
nice
day.
We appreciate it a lot.
Okay, thank you so much.
Okay.
Okay, good day to everybody.
Okay, be well.
Okay, you too. Okay, we had to abbreviate the class today. Hope everybody enjoyed it. We will put the class online momentarily, so if you missed any part of it, you'll be able to hear it. And again, we'll pick up next week at the same time, 11:15. That's New York time. And until then, have a very good week. Good holiday to everybody.